Hello, I'm Barry Daniel, and this is the podcast of the Middle Way Society. Our aim is to encourage a universal approach to living a more integrated, ethical life, avoiding dogma or any appeal to authority. My guest today is Sarah Dickinson, who is a volunteer with the Samaritans, which is a registered charity aimed at providing emotional support to anyone in emotional distress, struggling to cope, or at risk of suicide throughout the United Kingdom and Ireland. She's going to tell us a little bit about its rationale, what it does, how one can volunteer, and how it might relate to the Middle Way. Hello, Sarah. Welcome to the Middle Way Society podcast.
Hello, Barry. Thanks very much for having me.
Okay, well, could we begin by you telling us a little bit about the history of the organisation, what need in the community it's responding to, and what its objectives are?
We can, yeah. Well, the Samaritans is now over 60 years old. It was actually set up in 1953 by a gentleman called Chad Vara. He was a young curate working in London at the time. And one of his parishioners was a young girl. And he assisted at her funeral. She'd actually taken her own life because she'd had her first menstrual period and was terrified and didn't know what was happening to her. And Chad was absolutely horrified that this young girl had had nobody to talk to, nobody to explain things. And he vowed at that point that he wanted to prevent further tragedies and allow people to turn to him and others to talk about whatever was on their mind, no matter how personal, and even if those thoughts were about suicide. So it's grown from there, really, over the last 60 years to be a huge charitable movement. We've got over 200 branches, and it's really filling that need in the community to allow people the space to talk about things that they are distressed and anxious about and want to think about and explore more. And the overall objective really goes back to that notion of suicide, and our vision is that fewer people die by suicide, and that we're there 24 hours a day to provide that sort of emotional support for people who are having emotional difficulties and are in distress, including thoughts which may lead to suicide.
Okay. You mentioned that Chad Vara was a curate, but am I right in understanding that the organisation is secular in outlook? It doesn't have a religious message or anything like that.
You're right there. Yeah, it is. The name is taken from the parable of the Good Samaritan. And obviously Chad Vara was a Christian minister, but Samaritans has always been secular and remains secular. That's not to say that people from religious faiths are not welcome. Absolutely anyone is welcome, either to volunteer or indeed to call. But whilst the name links to sort of a Christian parable, it's not a Christian organisation.
Okay. Well, can we just go through some of the basic things that the Samaritans do? Like, first and foremost, you listen. Now, that sounds simple, but there's obviously a lot more to it than that. What do you understand by listening?
I think you're right. It is very complicated what we do in listening, although at the same time can be taken back to the sorts of a simple contact whereby you are hearing somebody. It's not always a voice that you hear in terms of a physical voice, because we have a number of ways that callers can contact us. So it might be on the phone or face-to-face where you are hearing directly their words, but equally it might be words in writing through a text or an email. So what we do in listening is we're giving that person, the caller, the space to explore their thoughts and feelings, the distress they're having at the time, and we are then clarifying those thoughts with them, reflecting things back, and really giving them that space to explore them and think about them, so that they then maybe come to some conclusions or understand them better. So it's quite complex in that sense, because you are really going with the caller's sort of words and thoughts and exploring how they're feeling at that time.
Okay, so it's sort of active listening, and you're kind of sounding board in a sense.
Yeah, we are. We're not there to give answers. We're not there to judge or advise. We are there to be a space, really, be that a voice on the end of the phone or somebody answering an email, to explore exactly what's going on for that person at the time, focusing on them, paying attention to what they're saying, exploring those thoughts and feelings, sometimes asking questions things to help them along the way with that call to clarify and reflect what they're saying.
Okay, and you said you don't judge. Now, I imagine that must be a challenge at times because in our culture we're so conditioned to judge.
Absolutely, we are conditioned to judge. And I think sometimes people are scared to open up about the things that they're thinking because they're worried about being judged. But actually, the point of the Samaritans is that we don't judge. So we allow people the space to speak freely, to not worry about a reaction from you, so that they can then talk and be comfortable with the more difficult things that are on their mind. You create an environment in the call that hopefully allows them to be comfortable so they can articulate thoughts and feelings that they've maybe never spoken about before, that they're terrified of. And actually, sometimes a caller will say, oh, don't judge me. And we're absolutely not there for that. We're there to allow them to say whatever they need to.
Okay, and how easy is it not to judge? Is it a skill that you cultivate to an extent, do you think?
I think it is. We all, as volunteers, will have our own natural judgments, and you're taught in the training to be able to suspend those. So in some sense, when you're in the branch and when you're taking calls, you are in your Samaritan's role, and at that point you know that you don't comment on things, so you are able to suspend judgment in those moments. So it takes practice,
yeah.
But actually, yes, you find you are able to do that, and the power of doing that is that callers are able to open up to you and explore those more difficult things.
Okay, and so presumably related to that, you don't give advice either?
No, we don't give advice, and again, we are just normal everyday people. We're not trained counsellors, we're not social workers, we're everyday people. So we aren't there to say what's right and wrong for the caller. We aren't there to tell them what to do or to solve the problems. We're there to talk, to listen in the main, and to allow them the space to explore their options and to draw their own conclusions. So it wouldn't be right for us to advise them in that sense. It's not really what Samaritans is about.
Sure, but presumably there are times, is there an expectation from the caller that you do give them advice?
Yeah, some callers do want to be told what to do. They are desperately seeking a solution, and it's gently encouraging them to think about, well, what would they like to do? What options do they think they have? And sort of gently pointing out that we're not there to advise and tell them, that it's about them and it's about their own right to make decisions. So, yeah, some callers struggle with that because they're wanting answers. They're desperately searching for answers. But we hopefully, through our questioning, our clarifying and reflecting, we can help them find their own answers without needing to advise them.
OK, so just to clarify then, Sarah, you don't have a message, you don't have any answers. You're just, in a sense, one human being talking to another, trying to make a connection and understanding what's going on in their lives and, importantly, how they are feeling.
Yeah, that's exactly it. We try to make that connection through the contacts, be that through a vocal contact on the phone or face-to-face or through the emails. It's exactly about exploring what's going on for them, what they need support with, what's causing them distress. And really, yeah, it's just one person to another, allowing them that space and time. And the connection, when you can connect with a caller, it is an amazing feeling, really.
Okay. So it's one thing to understand a person, but that you need to make this connection too, don't you? Obviously, so presumably compassion is a part of this.
Yeah, I think compassion's really important, and again, it's another sort of tricky concept. So when you're being compassionate, you are almost you're not saying you understand, because what you're doing then is trying to put yourself in the caller's place, and you're making assumptions almost about that caller. What you're saying is you're being compassionate, you're recognizing the distress that they're under, you're trying to care about them, you're trying to acknowledge that and give them space. And a key thing for Samaritans is using empathy. So you're identifying somebody's feelings, but you're not putting yourself in the place of those feelings. You're not saying, oh, I know what it's like, I understand. You're keeping it always about them, and what that allows you to do is be out of the story and to be able to hold out your hand to support them without sort of sympathising and taking over and making it about yourself and your experience. So the compassion is quite subtle in that you are, same as why you wouldn't advise in telling people what to do. You're keeping yourself at that distance so as to allow the connection and to allow it to be entirely about them, their feelings, their experience.
Okay, so in a sense, you avoid sympathy then, you just keep to your empathy.
Absolutely. Where possible, it can be quite patronising to a caller to sympathise and putting yourself in their place. It's a very subtle art that you learn within the training, but it's keeping within the sort of frame of reference of the caller, keeping within their terms and not assuming what they're saying, what they're thinking, what they're feeling, keeping it within their frame of reference. So that's where reflecting and clarifying helps, because you're always using their terms and trying to check that you understand where they're coming from rather than assuming things yourself.
Okay, and what about anonymity? How important is that?
It is really important, again, in terms of creating that connection and allowing a caller to feel comfortable within the environment. So an important thing about all our contacts is that they are anonymous. We don't have any of the caller's contact details, and a caller doesn't have to give us their name unless they choose to. Equally, they don't have to know the volunteer's name unless they ask for it. And this idea of anonymity is so that somebody feels free to speak, particularly if it's something they think they might be judged on, or it's a taboo in society. They feel they shouldn't be thinking it, they shouldn't be feeling it. And so that notion of being anonymous, not being connected to by name to the call, allows that freedom to speak about some of the things they've not been able to put into words before.
And confidentiality?
Yeah, confidentiality is really important, and it's another thing that sort of protects the space of the caller. So the idea of our confidentiality is that everything that is between the caller and the Samaritan and isn't shared beyond the Samaritan's movement. So the idea then the caller can speak freely. They don't feel as if somebody's going to report back to their employer, to their partner, to their children, or to whoever. They're allowed that space and it's confidential.
Okay, so it's obviously very important from what you're saying that you support the caller in making their own decisions, even if that decision is to take their own life.
It is, and that is part of the Samaritan's sort of ethos and practice is the self-determination of a caller. So we're there for the caller, we support them. We do try to explore options with them to get them to think about solutions for themselves without giving them a solution directly. But yes, we do advocate self-determination, and if a caller, after exploring often options, after thinking, after talking, still feels that taking their own life is right for them, then that's something that the Samaritans respect, and we will continue to support a caller in those circumstances. So we're neither pushing people into suicide nor talking them out of it. The vision, remembering, is that fewer people will die by suicide because we're giving people the space to talk and explore options and to think about the things that they're finding distressing and difficult. And the idea then would be that they come to their own conclusions and solutions, whatever that is for them.
Okay, so do you think this acknowledgement of the caller's right to self-determination is a thing that some people struggle with to an extent about Samaritan's policy in the wider community?
Yeah, you're right there. I think people do struggle with that about Samaritan's policy, because if you think about what is out there in society, it's very much about life and the preservation of life. So to have an organisation out there that allows people to make that choice and acknowledges the self-determination to make a decision potentially to end your own life can be quite challenging for some people. And indeed, I think that's quite often why callers feel the need to call us, because they feel the pressure of society that, or family or friends or whoever, sometimes unmeaningly, to actually that pressure to stay alive when they're having so many distressing thoughts and feelings and sort of trying to come to terms with wanting to end their life and those suicidal thoughts. So I think when you become a volunteer, that's definitely something you have to come to terms with yourself. Can you, I suppose, buy into the Samaritan's ethos that you are supporting people, whatever that decision is? We're neither talking people into suicide nor talking them out of it. We are actually allowing them the space to come to their own decisions and conclusions, having explored options. And sometimes the option is that they may end up making an attempt on their life. Sometimes the option that they find is that actually, no, that's not what they want to do, and they can see a clearer way. So by allowing people the time, the space, the safety, the anonymity, the confidentiality to think about what's going on for them, providing that emotional support, we're allowing people to self-determine.
Yeah, and of course, if you think about it, if someone who is harbouring suicidal thoughts, if they speak to a family member or a friend, it's just natural that as that person or yourself would want to try and convince them, you know, or trying to get them not to do it. And so they don't have the space to actually explore. They can't really talk about it.
Yeah. You're quite right there. That's exactly it. The pressure of people, as I say, and the majority of the time, that's pressure that they're not meaning to put on people. But it does then create a feeling in the caller that what they're thinking is wrong, it's taboo, it's something they can't possibly do. But they get more tangled in their thoughts because they can't get any clarity, they can't see any options, they can't see the wood for the trees, and they're feeling all of this pressure. And the idea is that within that call, you're giving them the time, you're not judging them, you're letting them say whatever they need to say, things that frighten them, things they've maybe not been able to put into words before, and you're hopefully allowing them to unpick for themselves what that means for them and what the right thing for them is.
And how often do you explore suicidal feelings?
We attempt to explore suicidal feelings and thoughts within every contact, certainly within every phone call, within an email trail or a text trail, within, you know, every few contacts, so that we're making sure that that is prevalent. If someone isn't suicidal, because not all our callers are, and we're not just there for people who are suicidal, we're there for people whatever their distress is. So if they've categorically, a caller said they're not suicidal, that's not something we would push or return to. But the idea is that because it's such a potential taboo in society, that by opening the subject gently and subtly for callers, if that is something that they're thinking, it hopefully allows them to feel more comfortable to explore it.
So what percentage of people who contact you do you think are experiencing suicidal feelings?
I mean, it's about a spectrum, really, because you can have callers that are having some very mild suicidal thoughts to callers who are potentially battling those on a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly basis, to people who are very, very close to making an attempt on their own life, or indeed have done so in the past. So it's certainly under 20% of our callers. We get over 5 million calls a year. We've got contacts with the Samaritan something like every 6 seconds, and maybe about one call in every 48 seconds is a contact from somebody who's experiencing suicidal feelings. So it's a huge part of what we do and a very important part of what we do, but it's not the only thing that we're there for. In fact, some callers will say to us, can I speak to you because I'm not feeling suicidal? And actually, yes, of course they can speak to us. It is about emotional distress, despair, difficult feelings, difficult situations, including thoughts that may lead to suicidal feelings, but not just that.
Okay. In terms of availability, how often are you available?
Well, the Samaritans as an organisation is there 365 days a year, 24 hours a day. The way it works out is that not every branch of the Samaritans is open all day, every day. But as an organisation, we're there whenever a caller may need us.
And then you were mentioning earlier about not just telephone calls, emails and texts, So what are all the ways that people can engage with you?
There's lots of different ways. So it started off taking us back to Chadvara back in 1953. It was a face-to-face contact, and the majority of contacts that Samaritans had were in person, so what we would call a face-to-face contact. As time's gone on over the 60 years, the bulk of our contacts now happen by phone, so on the telephone. But we do also have an email service, so callers can email in and be responded to by email. We're starting to expand our text service and hopefully make that much wider than it already is. And also we work with the traditional letter as well, so people can write to us. Through the written means, we do get contacts from people in the UK and around the world as well. So most of the face-to-face and phone calls are UK, but we are sort of global as well at times.
And you also go out in the community, don't you?
Yeah, we do. We go out in the community both to sort of advertise what we do, to fundraise, to work with vulnerable groups. So we have prisons links, and a lot of branches are linked to one of their local prison. And we train listening volunteers who support other prisoners. We have a festivals branch, so that's a group of volunteers who listen. They're affiliated with a branch, but they also go and have a stand at the various big festivals, so think Glastonbury, to talk to people who might be in distress, but also to spread the word about what we do and what we're there for. We have lots of community links, so with the railways, so locally we work with our local railway station to again promote what we do and to support callers. We also work with the media as well. One of the things that the Samaritans think is important is about the responsible representation of suicide in the media.
Okay.
So that's important to us to make sure that the media representations are right as well.
Okay, so just a bit of a change of tack here. What's the training like for the volunteers themselves?
Training is excellent and absolutely vital, because you certainly couldn't do the work of being a Samaritan without full training. So once you go through a selection process and start initial training, which is a 10-session program where you go through all of the types of calls, you go through the types of callers that we get, the different contacts and all the policies and procedures. So that's really thorough. Once you go into branches as an initial Samaritan, you're also supported by a mentor, so your training continues through a mentoring process before you are signed off to be let loose, so to speak, on callers by yourself. But then actually there's ongoing training. So part of your commitment of being a Samaritan is that you commit to undertaking 5 hours a year of ongoing training. So there's a whole range of events and training opportunities. Some of those are regional and national, as well as run by your local branch, to keep you upskilled, because it's vital that you are on top of policy and sort of offering the best practice really for callers.
Okay, and how often are you on shift?
Well, when you are selected and fully trained as a Samaritan, you make an agreement with the organisation, and that is that you will do a shift every week where possible, including one that's out of hours. So that would be after 11 o'clock at night and before 8 a.m. in the morning. And a shift is normally, it depends on the branch and how they work their rota, but at my branch it's 3 hours a week normally that you would do.
Okay, and how does a shift pan out? Just because just rough overview, what goes on?
Yeah, okay. Well, you're always on with a co-volunteer, because a branch has to have two of you on at once in order to be open. So you've got support there from your co-volunteer. And you would sign into the telephone system, which allows you to take telephone calls. And as the phone rings, you would answer those calls. You also, when there are phone calls, perhaps there are gaps in calls, you might do emails or texts. All methods of call are of priority, so you wouldn't necessarily prioritise the phones over emails and texts. And you also need some breaks in between as well, so you would take time in between callers, because you need to be fresh for each caller in order to give them the best possible sort of support, really.
Yeah. How are volunteers themselves supported?
There's a huge volunteer support movement. In fact, every branch has a group of volunteers who actually form that branch's volunteer support group, and they are there to really support you as a exactly what it says on the tin, to support you as a volunteer. You also, every shift has a leader. So a leader is a Samaritan who is a listening volunteer, but who's gone through an extra layer of training. They're not in the branch at the time, they're available on the telephone, but they're actually responsible for that shift. And at the end of the shift, you would ring the leader to offload. So to talk about the calls and contacts you've had, both so that the Samaritans are gaining sort of some information about callers, but also so that you can talk about how you're feeling. Has something upset you? Has it challenged you? Do you feel okay at the end of the shift? And the idea is that through offloading, when you actually close the door of the branch as you leave the shift, you've left the calls behind, so that you're not then thinking about them in between. If you find you are, that's when volunteer support comes in, and they're there to talk to you again about how you're feeling. So it's designed to allow you to fit it into your life without kind of taking the emotional side away with you.
Yeah. And is that your experience? Do you find that structure that the Samaritans has set up, do you find it helpful when you go off shift?
Absolutely, it does. It really enables you to be a Samaritan, because you have to be in the right space and mind space to do it. And that support network's vital in allowing you to sort of be in that space when you're on shift and leave it behind. So yes, I find volunteer support and the leader system really important.
Now, you've told me that the Samaritans membership fluctuates between 20 to 25,000 people. Now, that's a lot of people, you know, for the population of the UK. What do you think draws people to it?
A lot of reasons, really. I think it is something where you are ultimately helping people. And I think that's important. People do volunteer work for a whole range of reasons. One of the things that you have to do is be able to sort of buy into the vision and ethos of Samaritans. So there's a commonality in that we are all trained, we all know the policies and procedures, and we all have become comfortable with the ideas of self-determination, confidentiality, anonymity, not giving advice. But actually then within that, we're all totally different people. So a co-volunteer of mine has quite a difficult job, where he has to be quite ruthless, and what he finds is that the emotional side and the being empathetic, the compassion side of being a Samaritan, allows him to balance that more ruthless side in his professional role as well. My reasons for volunteering were that I wanted to do something. It worried me that as a person who talks about thoughts and feelings, it worried me that there are people in society who don't have anybody to talk to or feel they can't talk. So for me, Samaritans was an opportunity to get involved and to give people a space to sort of talk.
How long have you been a Samaritan, Sarah?
I've been a Samaritan for coming up 4 years now, so quite a while.
And do you think the skills that you've learned as a Samaritan, do you think you have a different perspective on life post being a Samaritan, or is it hard to tell?
Yeah, no, it does, because it absolutely hones your empathy, your compassion and your listening skills. So it has made me different in not judging other people, in allowing them space and time. So as a work colleague, I think I am different than I had been. And certainly I talked about my co-volunteer who definitely feels that he's different at work because of it. So yeah, it has changed me. And I think for the better as well.
Okay. What's your understanding of the middle way, Sarah, and how might that relate to what we've been talking about today?
Well, my understanding of the middle way is that the sort of being is about avoiding fixed judgments and thinking about wider perspectives. So for me, the idea of callers might come with a very fixed viewpoint, that they're sort of trapped in thoughts, they can't see the wood for the trees. And hopefully through the contact, through exploring those thoughts and feelings, they can open their perspective slightly, they may be able to see different options, they can explore what's happening for them in a wider in a wider way and open their perspective. And perhaps a lot of callers are thinking very much about the past, they're thinking very much about the future. And in that call, you're suspending that. You're thinking about what's happening now, what's going on now, and hopefully exploring options from there.
Okay, that's great. And my last question, if someone wanted to find out more about the Samaritans, either to volunteer, to call if they're, you know, if they're feeling vulnerable themselves, or if they just wanted some general information, how would they go about it?
Well, the Samaritans has a website, and that's the first port of call, particularly if you're wanting to volunteer. So that's www.samaritans.org. There's lots of information on there as for how to volunteer, because there's an application selection process for volunteers. So there's information on there. There's also information about the types of calls we get, about it sort of encouraging people to talk if they feel the need to. So the website's really important. We do have our national phone line, which is, as I've said before, 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, and that is 08457 90 90 90. So if somebody was feeling in distress and wanted to talk, they could call us on that. And our Samaritans email for callers is also, it's on the website, but I can give you that now as well, and that's jo@samaritans.org. So there's plenty of information out there, either if someone's thinking of volunteering or if they're feeling the need to talk themselves.
Okay, well, thank you very much for talking to me today, Sarah. It's been absolutely absorbing and fascinating and a real pleasure.
Thank you very much for having me.
You can find out more about Middle Way Philosophy at www.middlewaysociety.org.